Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week, our shows focus on the intersection of technology, media, and entrepreneurship with influencers and change makers around the globe. Today, literally. You are a vital part of the program, and we are so thankful that you've taken time to email in questions via Twitter, Facebook, my blog, and email. And today, Wednesday, May 11th, we look to answer those. And I am joined now by Luke Brindley-Jones, who is heading up a conference in San Francisco on the subjects that are, of course, near and dear to my heart, which are marketing, social media, and monitoring. Not in that order. So welcome, Luke.
Hi there. Hi. Thank you for having me on again, Jennifer. It's always lovely to speak to you and your great audience.
Yes, absolutely. So let's kick things off by talking about the conference itself, so people can, you know, if they're listening, they can take a look at the conference and some of the speakers, because the list that you got is very impressive.
Yeah, sure. It's a good crowd. The conference is called Social Media Marketing and Monitoring 2011, and it's on the 23rd of May in San Francisco. And yeah, we did it last year, and it was our first sort of major event in San Francisco, and it sold out really quickly, and people seem to love it. And the idea of the conference is a one-day event where we squeeze in as much as we physically can, because we know people are busy, on social media marketing. We did a separate event called Social Media Monitoring last year, but we've kind of included that in the mix with this one because we found it a bit weird to separate them out. They're so intertwined. There's a whole load of people. We've got Bunchbowl coming along, who are great for gamification and how gaming can be used in marketing these days. And we've got Aaron Strout from WC3. I always forget the name of the company, actually.
Well, I think that he's more I used the introduction when I talked about him. I think, you know, people know about the Dummy series of books from Wiley, and he is the co-author of Geolocation for Dummies, and this topic is around geolocation. So that will be somebody who's great on both a very high level and also the very, you know, I need to get my head around this, how do I do that kind of thing. So he can...
Yeah, he's very practical too. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, I know his session's really, I mean, we had a discussion about it, and he has a really practical approach to location, and so we've called it the five rules of location marketing. So, I mean, really, it's one of those things where you'll just be able to sort of note these things down, and as long as you stick to that, you'll have your basic strategy for location marketing in place. That's one of the things we've tried to do as well with Bunchbowl and the gamification thing. It sounds like one of these kind of weird concepts that's quite hard to get your head around, but actually, when you sit down practically and you talk to, you know, someone like Rajat, who knows how you can start to apply the rules and theories of gaming to your marketing so that you tap into people's you know, competitive sides and their need to be rewarded in different ways, then it becomes really clear what you can do. So, yeah, I think those two are going to be really, really good practical sessions for people. We also have a number of other ones that you've had Giles Palmer, I think, from Brandwatch on here before, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Talking about monitoring. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's a great guy, really knowledgeable, and they've done I think one of the trends as well that's happened over the last few years is the move from just kind of monitoring and listening to social media as, you know, tools for reputation protection and management, to much more being part of the armory of a marketing team. And they did a project recently with Activision, which you may know, big games company. They do Assassin's Creed game and Call of Duty and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, they got together with them and they decided to monitor the reaction to the game, like way before it was launched, you know. So they set up this whole project, and they set up 80 different views of the data. So they were tracking, you know, tweets and mentions on Facebook and blog posts and things like that. But they set up these different views for different people within the company to monitor what was going on. So you had the PR team on one side, the marketing team on another side, the product guys somewhere else, the customer service somewhere else, and they could all see the relevant data for them. So it was basically, you know, what people were saying, who was saying it, what kind of, you know, where they were saying it, which platforms, whether they were sharing videos and stuff like that. And so what this did was enable Activision to actually, you know, start to plan their future marketing campaigns much more accurately. And they could start to do the things that generated more positive buzz and plan for them. So, you know, Giles is going to be talking through that in much more detail and explaining how they did it. But for me, that's a really great practical example of some of the latest thinking in social media marketing and monitoring, you know, driving a marketing strategy.
And what's interesting, I think, about that example too, and in terms of the data that's getting used, we've talked a lot about in the monitoring space, a lot of consolidation taking place between different companies buying other companies. So Scout Labs was acquired almost 2 years ago now, by Lithium Technologies, who are a competitor to Jive in the forum space. So we kind of all waited and wondered how that would work. And now Salesforce.com has acquired Radian6, the big leader in the space.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. You and I had the fortune of being in a session, a virtual session yesterday for media, or last week, I should say, on Wednesday, a week ago today, with yourself and Giles, you know, you giving kind of the higher level keynote and then Giles diving into the how-to of monitoring. And so his is one of, It not only is a leader in the UK, but it actually, in my view, is one of the leaders right now in terms of just being a pure listening model that's finding ways to integrate, as you point out, in different parts of the organization, allowing them to look at what is relevant to them. And so I'll actually be using some of in the company's brand watch, Giles. It's not called Giles Palmer. social media.
He'd like it to be.
Yeah, it's actually it's called Brand Watch. So I'll actually be using some of that technology. I'll be talking about this crazy social photography space. Who knew?
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of actually predicted it a little while ago when I started talking about generational marketing and what cues people, and the same thing, it kind of goes along with the behavioral marketing piece, right? What triggers people to do particular things? And we know that baby boomers are this huge segment on the web. They certainly have more time and they have a lot more expendable income. And there's just so many more of them than Xers. So if you look at the spend opportunity and the nostalgia factor, they love pictures for the nostalgia. It makes so much sense to me. And other people are going, gosh, why is this happening? So we'll see a consolidation in that space clearly, but playing with monitoring tools for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because whenever I talk to you and I can, you have a really a perspective of the consumer use of tools. And I think that's the fascinating thing because my sort of business experience is usually B2B. So, you know, how do businesses relate with other businesses using social media? How do they use it for, you know, their marketing campaigns and stuff? And so it's, I think that's one of the interesting things we're going to try and do with the conference is mix it up a bit. And we actually did an event just last week in London on social CRM. So you know, how companies are starting to map data from the social web into their businesses and distribute it through their, you know, to different departments and stuff. And we did the most interesting session of that whole day, I think, although Salesforce did a pretty good demonstration on an iPad, an iPhone, and a PC, which was spectacular.
That's fantastic.
it was incredible. Although they wheeled in this machine to do it with, which can kind of watch all screens at once, which is worth £10,000, you know, $15,000 or whatever, which I was worried about because I wasn't insured for that kind of thing, but they did it anyway. It was great. So, but But the last session of the day was the customer perspective. So it's all well and good talking about what you can track and how you can use that data and engage with people and stuff. But it's no good if the end result is that you alienate the customer because they didn't know that you were watching them. They didn't know that you knew they were talking about your products or whatever. And so we asked the audience some questions, you know, just from a human perspective, a consumer perspective. So stuff like, if you were talking on Twitter and a brand responded to you on Facebook, would that freak you out? You know, would that be an issue? And many of us in the social media scene were like, well, no, that would be cool. But actually, people said it would freak them out. You know, they said that would be kind of weird because it would mean you kind of mapped them without them knowing. And all those kind of data privacy issues and personal issues as well about how you – you know, how you react to being contacted by a company or a brand are going to come to the fore, I think, over the next couple of years as monitoring and social CRM and these, you know, more engagement marketing kicks in. So, yeah, that was a fascinating thing, I think, from that event.
And were most people – that was a UK event, you said, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. We're actually just planning it for New York. So it's funny enough, it's on our site – as a July event in New York, but everyone's told us it's too hot in New York and nobody will want to come to it. So we're going to have to move it to
as long as you have good air conditioning. If you advertise good air conditioning, I lived in New York, so I think you could make a good case for it, depending on where it is. We'll have to talk offline about that. But I think it's funny that you brought up the difference between the business-to-consumer and business-to-business examples, because last year, I spoke at the conference that we're talking about, and I actually was working on a very heavy B2B project for Microsoft. And I do tend to work on, and that's kind of where my name has been in the B2B space. And so, actually, when I went to work for this company in stealth around social photography, one of the reasons I did it was to kind of be more consumer focused, and also some of the work that I'm doing on my book is very consumer focused. So that's the first, you're the first that's ever kind of referred to me as somebody that's kind of consumer focused. So it's kind of exciting, especially being around a lot of tech companies, because, you know, a lot of what they do is very business to business. So living in the Bay Area, you're sort of thought of as just, you know, someone that's going to get B2B, but maybe, you know, do you really understand consumer behavior in terms of what motivates them? What do they expect? And I think user expectation is one of the things that's great about, for example, Aaron's session is, you know, geolocation, you know, if you're going to use it, people do need sort of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 because, you know, as you rightly pointed out, I think it can be one of those areas that surprises. It doesn't have... It's so early for a lot of people that are starting to see it integrated into products, but yet the rest of it, and it's really been driven by, I think, in terms of deals available in your area, you know, so now you're allowing your phone to tell you where the deals are. And so consumers, you know, on an everyday basis might be using geolocation, or as we call it, geoloco, for that reason.
Yeah.
But then they don't necessarily know the privacy implications, or if we talked about geolocation in general, they would say, I don't get Foursquare. But they don't know that they maybe are using it already. So I think that'll be an interesting session to hopefully demystify what users expect. You know, I think they're expecting, without realizing it, to know where those deals are in their neighborhood, but they also have sort of a privacy piece to it as well. And that's why I thought it was interesting you mentioned the UK, because I've always, with my in-laws being English, obviously, and living in England, I've always been amazed how much information, much more information they're willing to share than folks here. You know, when my mother-in-law sat and talked about it, it was, well, in socialized medicine, it kind of came back, somehow the conversation came back to that, and she said, well, you know, with socialized medicine, I'm just kind of used to giving my ID number out. And so it didn't seem that odd to me to sort of give my, or want to give my for lack of a better example, my zip code out at the register mm-hmm. when I go to Walmart. I don't know why she likes going to Walmart here, but she definitely does. There's nothing wrong with Walmart, but the UK equivalent, which is
Asda, I think. Asda is owned by Walmart. Yeah,
so the George clothing line was inherited the other way. So we got the George clothing line from you guys.
Well, you're lucky you. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's how I like to dress, is make sure I go to Walmart
sure.
and get my suits, which there's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But it's funny you mentioned, because I'm doing this kind of introductory presentation at the conference on the 23rd, and it was really just, I don't normally do presentations at my own events, but for this one, I just wanted to tie it all together, because we've got guys who are giving really kind of very nice, clear, how-to presentations. So like Aaron's presentation on the geolocation marketing, I think will be really straight and clear. But then we have others. We've got Chase McMichael, who's going to be talking about his company, Infinigraph, and how they map content. And how they map people's uses of content in different ways. So they can give you a list of the people who like brands that are related to your brand, therefore might like you too, kind of thing.
They call that affinities, which is, I think, so interesting.
Yeah.
And they just
had
a new version of the project come out, or their product, I should say, come out, and I cannot wait. This will be my first time actually at the conference seeing and hearing what the new product is about. So I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, well, this is it. It's great, actually, because Chase sends me through stuff nice and early, so I can kind of critique it and go through it. But it's really interesting stuff. And the one thing about it is you really need to sit and listen to Chase talk you through it before you really get it, and you have that aha moment after about half an hour, and you realize that this could be the future of your marketing. We're trying to position those kind of sessions which have the potential to lose people or blow their minds with much more practical outcomes as well, or at least nearer practical outcomes, because you need to kind of learn that kind of theory and understanding to really get what it does for your business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the interesting thing we're trying to really juggle there. So we have a couple of sessions, and you mentioned you didn't actually, but you might have mentioned.
Go for it anyway.
when we do San Francisco events, we know there's going to be a slightly different audience to the rest of the world. So one of the things I find that is unique to San Francisco is we get a high number of startups coming along. So inevitably there are, a reasonable percentage of people who are just starting out some exciting new venture. So we also try and cater for those guys. And we actually have Dan Martell, who I'm sure you know, from
mm-hmm.
Flowtown, talking through what...
I love Flowtown. Every marketer loves Flowtown, but I'll stop you before you describe what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that's another really good example of, for those out there listening that are newer to this, and I know I've encouraged my San Francisco State class to listen in, so not to lose people, and kind of just to backtrack a little bit, what Flowtown does and Rapleaf as well is take all kinds of data about consumers based on their email address. And so marketers compare that information with the email address and get a much better perspective of the customer. And that's sort of the kindergartner version of what it does. But go ahead and talk about what Dan's going to talk about at the conference.
Yeah, well, it's nice, actually, because, again, this is when I talk about everything kind of converging. I mean, that's essentially one of the key issues that a lot of the companies that were at Social CRM, our London event last week, were tackling. How do we map this data across? So Flowtown is definitely part of that solution as well, but targeted, I think, at smaller businesses. Dan's going to be talking through, what brands can learn from startups, so in terms of their marketing. And because that's one of the things that certainly I've found over the last few years is you know, we talk to the big brands, like, you know, Activision working with Brandwatch, and they do these, you know, big projects that are very exciting and very, you know, cutting edge. But actually, it's the little guys who move quicker and are quicker to innovate with new features and products that come out. And Dan, you know, being in that space, the startup space, is very, very close to that. And he can see, you know, when a small company just realizes, oh, we can use that feature slightly differently, and turns it into a marketing tool. So he's going to be talking through a whole bunch of ideas and situations and case studies where small businesses have the edge over the big boys. So I think, you know, hopefully that's going to help our startup crowd.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, that's why I've sort of added entrepreneurship to the title of the show, because we have so many people that listen in to get tips that are with smaller companies. Mm-hmm. And you never know kind of what you're going to get. I know you teach as well, and the pools of people that you get. But I mean, with my last, with this class that I'm doing now, I'm also doing the conference with Media Bistro. But what's interesting about sort of the face-to-face classes, I literally had one of the top marketers from Salesforce there, and DMI Music, General Mills, and then other people that were actually looking to start their career. So some people there, because it's a certificate program, were there to being paid by their company to get the certificate. And then others were in a very different place where they were actually looking to kind of kickstart their career. And you know, it's interesting to kind of serve all of those levels at the same time without losing anyone. And I think that's the tricky balance. So from a conference, from a conference leader point of view, how do you handle that? You know, kind of making sure that you're getting everybody's perspectives in, and where can people potentially find information online? Will it be live blogged or tweeted and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. So, we will have some people blogging there at the event. So, and that'll be going up on our socialtimes.com, which is our site. And we'll also be using the Twitter hashtag, which is SMM11, SMM11. So you'll be able to follow proceedings there as well. And there will be some videos we'll be producing on the day as well. We have a film crew there, so we'll be videoing some of it and putting it out on Vimeo afterwards. It is a tough call trying to match it together. But the great thing that I found recently is that although, people come with different goals. So we do have some big brands who are coming to hone their strategies, quite high level, major marketing strategies with big budgets and staff to go into it. And equally we have, you know, just the startups who are coming along to get their tips. A lot of the takeaways will be applicable at all different levels. So, you know, let's say the Brandwatch guys are going to be talking about how you can use monitoring to manage your marketing campaigns. Well, okay, maybe you can't afford Brandwatch, Radian 6, those kind of tools, but you can be using those practices of actually planning ahead with your marketing and learning from your campaigns using one of the free tools. So, one of the ones I talk about is Viral Heat as a much more cost-effective monitoring tool. Some people use Google Alerts. It doesn't pick up a lot of stuff. It misses, you know, quite a large percentage of the data, but it's more real time than some of the monitoring tools. So each of these different tools has their plus points. But the main thing is you can apply the theories from each of these sessions to your different types of business. So hopefully that's how we'll get around it.
Yeah, and I think that was something that you touched on really well last week, because I know with Giles, you know, he's dealing with brands that want to engage, they want to be monitoring because they know they should, but yet different agencies that I work with or different companies that I consult for, I know that their executive management are using Google Alerts, and so if they see a competitor come up more, they're really relying on, you know, kind of the web 1.0 version of monitoring. And
yeah,
so
sure.
and you know, not really realizing how, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily know what to do in terms of how to figure out how do I ask them to spend more money. And I thought you did a great job of talking about some solutions for what to do for companies that are in that kind of predicament. So, you know, I think this is probably one of those that these times that we could take a time out and do like a practical example of in the Valley, though it's the Valley, it's so ironic, companies don't necessarily want to pay for monitoring or don't necessarily see value in it. They see it as something expensive, maybe something their PR company should do, and maybe they should be, but many of them feel like they can't afford it either. So in terms of kind of making the case for where to start, what would you recommend to both agencies and companies alike, considering the startups in the mix as well and the audience, in terms of a starting place for monitoring, just the monitoring piece?
Sure. Well, I mean, as with all these things, the first thing is to know why you're doing it. And that's not just a sort of a get-out response. It's very practical because there are very different tools targeted at different results. You know, so a lot of the heavy-duty monitoring tools out there, the BrandWatches, Visible Technologies, Sysomos, things like that, they started out as research tools more than anything. So they're heavily based on, you know, accessing large amounts of data and turning it into reports and results. So if you're looking at large amounts of data, if you're a big brand, then that's, you know, that may be what you need. If you're much more interested in engagement, so you're more interested in knowing when somebody's talking about you or your products or your services or your industry, and you want to connect with them, then you're looking at an engagement dashboard, which is a different thing. So, you know, some of the monitoring tools, Radian6 probably being the most best known, have tried to marry those two things up. So you do get your reports, but equally you can respond to people. But then there are tools that actually do it, you know, more focused, in a more focused way. So that's when you start looking at things like Hootsuite. The one I use and I know you're aware of as well is MarketMe Suite.
They're great.
Yeah, really, really cool little company and much more focused on, you know, like MarketMe Suite lets you set up, you know, geo-targeted searches on Twitter. So let's say you're a small business in the Valley and you want to be able to target and you want to, you know, connect with people who need your services within 20 miles of where you are, then you can do that using MarketMe Suite on Twitter. And it has little template tweets, so you can click one of those and respond to those people who appear in the search results without, you know, spending too much time on it. So sort of knowing what you want will, in terms of engagement or heavy duty research results and reports, is the first decision. And then after that, it comes down to just, you know, checking out the features that they offer and looking at the price point. So the one I mentioned, Viral Heat, is for me offers probably the most functionality for the least money. You know, they have a very, I think it's a, you know, $20 or something on the bottom rung of the tool.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the one from Constant Contact, which is called Nutshell Mail, which is, you know, Mark Schmulen, I think, has been on here, talked about in the past, which is, again, it's a free tool and it's email-based. So it sends you, you know, you can set up searches and stuff on there and it sends you the results to your inbox, which is kind of handy. Yeah, and then you're probably onto the sort of the lower end of the more sort of expensive tools. So I'm trying to remember for the life of me one that I really like, UberView, which is UberView, UberView, I think. Let me get. I'll check that while we're talking because I can spell these things.
It's UberView. VU, and the way that they have it is they have VU in capitals to make it nice and confusing, but it is a .com.
That's why they confuse me.
Yeah, because you would think it would be uber.vu, but it's not. It's uberview, VU.com. So that's That's the one. I'll tweet out the link later.
Yeah, cool. So, I mean, so those guys, it started out as a free tool, actually, but they've added so much functionality now that it's getting close to, you know, the fully fledged monitoring tools. And it's, I think it's, you know, $150 or $170 or something for per month for an account, which isn't expensive if you're doing serious monitoring. But, you know, this is the thing. Most companies, especially small businesses, they should start with the free tools, try stuff out, do some free trials. SM2 is another monitoring tool that lets you have a free version so you can try it all out. And then, you know, see what results you get. The bottom line, though, with monitoring really is that you get what you put in. So if you really, really want to do this properly and you really want to get good results, and you can, then you want to be looking at, getting somebody who understands the tools to help you with them. So this is where, you know, analysts come in and having people writing proper queries so that you can actually really find out what people are genuinely saying, and you don't get all the rubbish coming back in the data, which is kind of what you get if you don't have the, you know, the experience of doing it. So I don't want to put anyone off. I think it's a great thing to do. I think it's a crucial thing to do. But equally, if you want to do it seriously, you probably want to get some help, or at least ask the advice of different people. Yeah.
I think one of the most brilliant things that you just said, and I think I have a feeling you have no idea that you said it, is that that companies need to know why they're doing it. And I think they're monitoring. And I think that in the case of agencies, they have so many different companies with different expenditure levels, et cetera, that don't know why, or maybe the case is different for each of the companies. So some don't know, and then others maybe need to be challenged by either their agency or by someone else, a vendor, someone not inside, or someone inside needs to kind of be taken aside and talked to and said, you know, there's value in this for these various reasons, and whichever ones resonate with the sort of sea levels in the room, then that's the one that's what wins the argument over. But what about people in those cases where, because I think that's just such a common scenario where they just, you don't know what you don't know. So for example, I remember helping prepare a report for a C-level actually coming in from the UK, and he was going to be taking over part of a department, and so it was quite a daunting thing that was going on. And so the organization didn't know what to have prepared. The agency wasn't quite sure what to have prepared for that reason. And so I did, you know, I used my Radian 6 account to come up with quite a few data points that I felt were important for them to be aware of in terms of their reach, what people were saying, just the sort of basic, as you rightly noted, sort of, you know, the brand monitoring piece of it. And they were just entranced by it. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. But what was interesting is I was, as a consultant to an agency who was then going into this company, no one decided to do anything to actually, you know, start a trial somewhere. They're still using Google Alerts. No one actually took it the step further. And I suppose I could have pressed it, but that wasn't, you know, that's not necessarily the relationship with the company. But it's kind of like you don't know what you don't know. So I think my coming back to the conference, I think that's one of the key things is you don't know what you don't know. And so you have agencies and companies. Razorfish is a great example of an agency that probably doesn't feel like a competitor to a lot of agencies here because they're creative, they're ad. And John Zell could certainly help potentially answer some questions for folks. That might be a good example of someone to come and talk to at the event. Can you think of other examples like that?
What if people who can help with that at the conference?
One of the things that I love about your events, and I see this happen every single time, and this is why I think it's important to go to them, is that, and I say this in the intro for the show, which is that I've never, at other events, I just don't see this, where you see leading experts, brands, and agencies, as well as journalists, all come together at these events, and they're quickly deal-making. They're deciding on coverage and interesting stories. They are actually, you know, choosing three or four agencies to come in and present them or provide them with a proposal. So, you know, I think that's one of the pieces that's extremely unique about their events that people, you know, I mean, and I think that's one of the appeal to startups too, certainly, is, you know, when you have certain people in the room, and I don't know if you can talk about any media that are potentially going, but, you know, certainly the media that show up to these conferences are very keen to give tips as to how to be helpful. You know, how to help them tell the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, actually. The thing I like about, especially with the San Francisco event, I mean, it's great in New York and stuff where we're doing the other events this year, but certainly, you know, people like Chris Hua, who's going to be joining us for a panel, you know, the founder of Social Media Club, now works for Deloitte Consulting, you know, loads of experience
and
in this area.
Everybody needs to do me a favor and ask him the story, maybe after the panel, on how he came up with the title for his new role at Deloitte, because that's a whole interesting, interesting separate story. But go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Luke.
Yeah, well, no. So I mean, you know, so guys like him, you know, I would urge people coming to you know, get him in a corner and really ask him the questions that they need answering. And also, yeah, I mean, Aaron now with a big agency. A wealth of experience as well. We also have, yeah, you're right, the press. We have Payman Nilfarooj, who's the co-founder of NetShelter, you know, and so they have a whole bunch of blog properties and, you know, media properties as well. So anybody looking to sort of to make their way with the media should be having a chat with him. He almost certainly has a very popular site that you could get yourselves on if you knew how, you know. So he's definitely a guy to talk to, and we've got other you know, press and journalists coming, and a lot of the startup scene journalists as well, looking for the next big thing. So yeah, it's a good crowd. And actually, talking about the next big thing, we've got Gary Lee from MBlast coming along as well, and I was hoping he might be able to join us today. I'm not sure that he is, but that's a fascinating company, and we have a whole session on influencer, sort of identifying influencers and engaging with them, and MBlast, which is his company, that's effectively what they do. So it's kind of like most people have heard of, you know, clout, which is, you know, a fairly simple way of gauging influence, in inverted commas, using Twitter. But MBlast looks to sort of extend that a bit further and produce mappings of influencers for different industry sectors. And I've used, you know, their service for various projects and stuff with clients, actually. And it is a fascinating thing. You get a list of influencers, so online influencers, people who are engaging through social media and online. And you put it next to a list of, you know, industry influencers created through research and other means. And, you know, some of the key figures are there, but actually a lot of them are completely different. And this is the fascinating thing for me, you know. So you know, much as you've done this with your clients, I think I've put a list in front of a well-known telco in the UK and shown them, you know, you think you're liaising with the top influencers in your industry, but look at this list. You know, these are the highly connected people now. These are the people you need to be engaging with. And they didn't know half of them, you know. So that for me is a really exciting new area. So we've got this, you know, an hour-long discussion about that because I know it's controversial as well. You know, some people dismiss the concept of, you know, influence as a sort of something we can't accurately measure and therefore we shouldn't try. I don't really subscribe to that, but I'd be interested to hear, you know, the different views, I think, on that discussion. What do you think?
Well, I'm gearing up because after this, I've got the actual influencer week for the Media Bistro boot camp that you, like I said, that you took part in last week. And so it used to be your partner in crime, but Murray Newlands is actually going to be talking about kind of the bigger picture of influence mapping. So I'm curious what he has to say. And then the other side of that, which is E. Karen, which got the Forrester Award in B2C category, or actually, sorry, their B2B Syntheso is B2C in the monitoring space. And so I think that, and I having used their, I mean, gosh, I think I rolled out their solution at an agency. It's been at least 3 years now, and it's, I've always liked it because it's very, you have to get very hands-on with the tool. And I feel like if you're going to do something, you kind of have to, you have to do it right, or you should probably shouldn't do it at all. You need to get in the weeds to a large extent. And I think that what's interesting is actually when we were early on, when you were talking about the conference coming to San Francisco, and we bandied about names that would be interesting to have. There were certain people that I reached out to, and I came back to you, and I said their ability to, without putting any company on the spot because they meant well, without being able to, without naming names, you know, their ability to say something because of where they are and with in terms of acquisition or whatever else means that if they're in a room with people at a conference like this, which is very open, their value is kind of gone because they have this box that they're allowed or allow themselves to speak in. So when you come to a conference and the expectation is, sure, people can walk up to you and ask you questions, even if on a panel people don't ask you questions. And I tend not to like that myself, not as someone that goes to a conference. And certainly for people that are paying, I like to put myself in those shoes and go, gosh, would that be valuable to me? But yet these are companies that we've talked about that are incredibly influential. So you would think that they would really be adding to the conversation. So I think when it comes back to what you talked about, coming up with those influencer lists and handing them to a chief executive at, you know, a C-level, whatever their particular title is, you know, you have to make sure that you're weeding out the people that are not, that are incredibly influential but aren't necessarily going to do anything to heighten awareness, brand perception. You know, that they're, you know, that, for example, they're not going to retweet you or they're not going to see a lot of value in what you have to say. And that is really important.
I think you're right. I was thinking, you know, when you look at the different tools, there are certain people, yeah, who could just be influential in the real world. You know, yeah, I'm the CEO of such and such, therefore I have influence because when I say something, you know, people listen. But actually online, if you're measuring it through the connections that they have and the resonance of what they say and how much they interact with people and engage, then they're not so influential. So I think, yeah, that is interesting. And actually, it does chime in with real life as well. So you'll notice that at our conferences, we tend to avoid just big name brands, both within the social media scene, but also externally as well, because precisely because of the reason you said, those people can't say the stuff that individuals can get away with saying, and therefore provide the real value. So we tend to pick people rather than companies to be our speakers. Sometimes we'll pick individuals whose companies you'll never have heard of, but we think they're great, you know. And often, you know, people say, well, why don't you have, you know, why isn't Facebook headlining your conference this year? Well, actually, you know, maybe they're not in a position where they can give enough, you know, value just because they're bound by the various corporate things they've got. I think it's an interesting area as well, definitely.
Well, and I think with Facebook in particular, the interesting thing there is one of the people that I think is so undervalued by some in sort of the social marketing realm is Randy Zuckerberg. And I know from putting together the Next social media marketing boot camp with Media Bistro. She's going on maternity leave soon. And I know that she, when I speak with her, she adds a lot of value. And so it was really interesting to bring, you know, bring her kind of second in command into the fold. And he's kind of catching up and learning and that sort of thing. So I think there's a difference too, depending on who, you know, depending on where people are in their lives, their career, whatever, in terms of what kind of value they really can bring to the table. Because certainly a Randy Zuckerberg, we know, can bring a lot of value to the table. But if she's not available, just being at Facebook, is that enough? What is that person kind of allowed to say? Because she's very clear, you know, being related to Mark Zuckerberg, it helps to kind of know, I would imagine, what you can and can't say. So that I would imagine there's a lot of things where, I know with my siblings, you know, you don't even need to talk about it. You know what you can and can't say. So I think that is, that's an interesting dynamic, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think you're exactly right. You know, I mean, those big companies, sure, they're great to have. They sell tickets, but more important for an event like this, you know, you want to be able to, you know, I mean, I know certainly it makes me kind of feel cringy when I'm, you know, and they say, okay, well, we're not taking questions on X, Y, and Z. And so I say, well, okay, well, there's a room of people that are going to walk up to you. So we're going to either have to kind of escort you out or, you know, find a back door or something like that. And you know, is that really worth it? Does it at the end add value and make for a good conference?
That's it.
Because one of the things last year is that, you know, and this happened at the monitoring, there were two things I remember. One was at the, because, you know, like, as you said, last year they were separate events, the marketing event and the monitoring and marketing event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so at the social media marketing event, I remember there were different, you know, people, a lot of people getting bids and going up to companies, and Flowtown, Dan was there from Flowtown. Nobody really knew what that technology was. So many people came up to me because of the show and talked to me about their startups. So I got a lot of pitches, which was fantastic. I talked about what I could about a big case study and book that I'd written for a large company at the event. But then at the monitoring event, you have people like Pete Cashmore was there, which was pretty surprising. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always interesting to see Pete Cashmore in the flesh. But he was there and, you know, and was listening in. But what was interesting about that was that there were more kind of big names there. And I don't know that he really talked outside of Marcel Lebrun, who is the CEO, I think he's still the CEO of Radian 6. I don't know that he really talked to that many individual people that would have liked to talk to Pete Cashmore about Mashable, what they cover, would they cover his event. So I think it was interesting just in terms of your own events company, you know, it kind of was propelling itself throughout the year to get bigger and bigger and with bigger names and bigger people coming. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic to see play out as well, because you're building a brand and name for yourself.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I hadn't really sort of getting on to our business model and sort of how we work and stuff. I mean, the one thing I don't want to do, I mean, I've been to a couple of big conferences recently, and there are two things I don't want to have happen to us, which is, one, you know, just go for big name brands because they're big name brands and have them on the stage or whatever, because I think you kind of, as I said, you miss out a lot. And the other thing is just to get too big, you know. So the whole point of our events is it's one day, it's one place, it's everyone in one room, there are no streams, and you get to talk to everyone, you get to hear everyone. And I want to kind of keep it like that. So I suspect actually this event this year is not going to have as many people as last year. I think it went a bit crazy last year. We had people standing in the corridors kind of thing. So I think it's going to be a bit more civilized. I think we'll be a bit more but hopefully we'll have just as much value. So that's the goal, really. And that's kind of why we tend to do lots of sort of smaller events, you know, rather than just big one-off events. And also because it's driven by, you know, we talk a lot by who I'd speak to, the interests that are, you know, that are sort of current and people are interested, you know, the latest things. And I think if you sort of try and turn it into a bit of a factory and just, you know, work on formulas, you'll lose the interest for people. So, I mean, for example, this one, I came across a company called Curebit. I don't know if you know them at all. Do you?
Mm-hmm. It sounds familiar.
Yeah. So, I mean, small company. It's a, you know, startup, just come out. They contacted me and said, you know, as I'm sure you get a lot as well, check us out. Mm-hmm. We're doing interesting stuff. They have a really cool little simple referral module that you can just stick on your, you know, your thank you page after somebody's bought something. And it says, you know, get 10% off or get a 10% rebate if one of your friends buys the product too, and they get, you know, 10% off as well. You can actually set the percentage on that. But it's a really nice little cool tool. And so we're going to use it for our events. And, you know, I just said to them, come along to the event. I think people would like to see you. So they're going to be exhibiting at the conference. And they're not paying, actually. They're just doing it because I think it's cool. So we can do stuff like that, you know. And that's I think that's the nice thing about running your own conference business is you can try and keep interesting stuff coming through.
Yeah, I love that about the way you do it so that it doesn't get too insane, you know, and too inaccessible. I mean, it kind of got in the danger zone, and I love Brian Solis. He's, he's someone I would consider a friend and generally have only really good things to say about him. And it actually wasn't him, but there was one event that you guys did last year in terms of, interesting dynamics that you see at events that you've quickly course corrected on. But in terms of keynote from a big name, Brian Solis keynoted the email marketing conference.
That's right, yeah.
And at the end, when people were asking questions, he basically said, or maybe it was even during the actual, during the presentation, he said something like, you know, basically, I don't believe in email. Email's kind of dead. Our boxes are too full. And so it was more about, you know, the idea of engagement, the book, and it felt, and it very much doesn't fit Brian to come to an event just for the sake of coming to events. You know, he is in demand all over the world, as we all know. And so it was a weird thing because it was sort of like this disconnect that I don't even think he realized until he was on the stage. And I think a lot of people got exposed to the book, and that was a good thing. But again, you haven't done that this time, I think. And I think that's actually a really good thing that you have erred away from just, you know, let's get the big name because they've got something interesting out, but actually picking people that have case studies or, you know, like in the case of, you know, I'll use myself and give myself a little compliment, but, you know, trying to, you know, create a presentation that's using a monitoring element so that I can use some data that actually crosses both the marketing side, because I could certainly talk forever about the marketing piece in terms of social photography and what it means to be an app versus be online doing passive gaming, but actually doing some, you know, Giles was kind enough to give me a trial of BrandWatch. Somebody used BrandWatch. I usually use Radian 6, but actually use that product to do a bit of monitoring so that hopefully I'll have some data that'll be interesting and inject some passion into what I present. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, you're putting together people that want to be there, want to provide that added value rather than
name. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think we have got some people who, you know, like yourself as well, who are well known, and it's, you know, you're well known for good reason because you give good value. So I think with Brian, it's interesting because, you know, I love Brian. I think he was here in London a month or so ago.
I think we're all big fans.
Yeah, that's right. And he gave a great talk actually in London where he expanded from, you know, the concept of, we were talking about social CRM and monitoring, all this kind of stuff. And he took us up a level and he said, no, think about the socialization of the business. Think about, you know, how it impacts on recruitment, how it impacts on, you know, other aspects of the business, which which was, you know, it was great value and it was fantastic. But you're right, it's not necessarily appropriate for the niche events and that we do. So yeah, we have thought about that quite a lot with this one. And you know, I guess the other factor is that Brian's joined the Altimeter group now as well, so he's harder to get hold of for things. So we'll see.
It's interesting to Jeremiah in particular, you know, doing things and connecting people, you know, and him telling me more and more, you know, I'm only really doing paid events. And, you know, certainly I do pay events and I do non-pay events, depends on the event, but certainly I like to do as many non-pay events as possible. They tend to pay their dividends anyway. You get the clients. Do I need more clients? No, but it's a nice, it's definitely a nice way of connecting with people, and it's certainly a great way of getting your hands in the mix of things with people. You know, I'm sure I can tell you right now, Chase will say, oh, now that we have the new product out, I want you to demo it, and I haven't had a chance yet. So actually it'll be a really cool thing because I'll get to demo that. I'm really excited to see what Surfish have to say. I'm curious. I don't think Giles is actually going to be able to come up, but Seb will be there. And he's talking about monitoring the game industry and the Activision case study that you talked about. You've got the incredible panel, Chris Huer. I just love him. He's just like, you know, he's like the big brother I never had. But also with Peep Browser, which is another one that a lot of people talk about. And I believe Peep Browser started from Craigslist, if I'm not mistaken, the data at least came from there. There were some relationships. So People Browser is one that people talk about that connection a lot. But certainly when I consult with sort of the Boston crowd, they think of Craigslist with People Browser hand in hand.
Jody Rich is, he's talking on the influencer panel. But he has a unique perspective as well on that because, you know, People Browser has, they have access to you know, the back catalog of tweets that I don't know exactly how or why, but they have access to more tweets than anybody else, is my understanding. So they can actually do a lot more interesting stuff with aggregating that kind of data and giving you, you know, showing you trends than a lot of other people. So, and he's also a very engaging guy, Jody Rich. He spoke at our New York event and, you know, held the crowd for half an hour there. So, yeah, he'll be good. And we also have a late addition for that panel, which is Renee Blodgett as well. Met her. Yeah, she's great. And I met her, she was over in Cambridge doing a talk a couple of years ago. So, and I know now she's got more into the whole sort of influencer analysis side of things. So she's going to be joining that panel as well.
That's going to be really cool. I love, of course, any conference that has a afternoon nap, tea, and biscuits break is one that I like to go to. So we should say that this event is coming up Monday, the 25th of May, from 9:30 a.m. There's actually a arrival time is 8:30, so you can get your tea and your coffee in your system. Runs till 6:30, and it's at the Marines Memorial Club and Hotel, which is at Sutter Street and Mason. So the place to park, if you're parking, would be the Olympic Garage, or you can use the Union Square Garage if you want to go shopping afterwards. So those are a couple of garages. There are some that are a little sketchier if you walk down Mason Street that are less expensive, but for the whole day if you want to do that. And then there's tons of public transit options. So Powell Street BART you can take. That would be true of Muni and the buses that run right along Sutter Street. So Muni, BART, buses, everything. It's super easy to get to for folks that maybe don't know the area as well or are coming out from the peninsula. It's something that you can definitely access, and I'll be trying to be green and take public transit in myself. So
I should mention the URL again. So it's rsocialtimes OurSocialTimes.com. So OurSocialTimes.com. And then you click a link there to social media marketing in San Francisco, and you can get your tickets online.
Yes, and the hashtag is SMM11. Again, that's S Mary Mary 11. And it looks like the URL you can just use if you want to go directly to the event itself is OurSocialTimes/SocialMediaMarketingSanFrancisco. San Francisco is spelled out, so you can take a look at that. The program and the details are available, and I hope that you will take the time to come. Certainly, if you want to come up and say hi, I definitely would love it. I always love talking to listeners. It definitely encourages me to make sure that that I'm on the right path with who you want to hear from. So I thank you, Luke, for coming on and spending the time. I'm sorry we didn't get our extra special guest on this program, but I think we got through a lot of really good information about both what's going to be covered, but also how people can follow the event with sort of the video, the tweets, and the Our Social Times site itself, sure, which has a lot of good information.
Well, it's a great, great pleasure. Thank you for having me. I hope people have been inspired. So hope to see you all on the 23rd.
Absolutely. And if you have any kind of promo code, Luke, feel free to pass it on. We'd love to give promo codes, but I'll let you let me know later, and we'll go
okay
from there.
Okay. Well, actually, I can. You're right. I can announce one now. It's SPKR10. We'll get 10% off.
So it's
S for
Sam,
sugar, P for Peter.
And then R for razor, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
SPKR10. Yeah.
SPKR10. Okay, cool. I will definitely add that to my blog so that people will be able to access that. And people get 10% off? Is that what it is?
10% off for that, yeah.
That's fabulous. That's fantastic. So few spaces left. Get your spaces while you can. And Luke and Lee Jones, it's always a pleasure. And have safe travels from your home. And can't wait to see you.
Thank you. See you then.
Right.
See you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take good care. And thank each every one of you for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. We hope you enjoyed the program. So if you do, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us your favorites or follow on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you're on iTunes, subscribe to us and please rate us. It's really hard to get ratings over on iTunes, but I always beg for them anyway. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free information at jenniferneely.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great day.